soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force. You are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you. In company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940-41. The United Nations have inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man to man. Our air offensive has seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war, and placed at our disposal great reserves of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us all beseech the blessing of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking.
That was the voice of General Dwight David Eisenhower, the Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces, addressing his men the night before D-Day. We're going to talk about that in a second, but first, Preborn is in the business of saving the lives of babies, and let me give you an example. You know, recently a young mom heard a Preborn ad, and the lives of her family changed dramatically. She had kept the pregnancy a secret from her mom and dad and made an appointment at an abortion clinic. Days before that appointment, she heard a Preborn ad on the radio and heard that a baby's heartbeat is detectable just days after conception. She couldn't get that message out of her mind. Well, the day came and she arrived in the parking lot of the abortion clinic. She sat there thinking again about that powerful message. While she was terrified, she called her mom and said, "Mom, I'm pregnant. I have an appointment right now for an abortion and I can't do it. Please come and get me." Together, we helped, that means you and me, helped to rescue this precious baby and mother from the pain of an otherwise fatal decision. And we can be praying for this brave young girl. Preborn writes 200 stories just like this every single day. One ultrasound is just $28. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy, preborn.com/Sandy. $28 will pay for one ultrasound, and I bet you can afford even more than $28. So give your most generous donation to help people, women. We don't have our name because some of these stories, they don't want to give their names, and you can understand that. But this young girl, her life is real, I guarantee you. And this, you know, an ad like this, someone like me talking about this is what caused her to choose to keep her baby. So we need to keep this going, keep the word, get the word out that there's an alternative to abortion. And that's what Preborn is doing. So go to preborn.com/Sandy, preborn.com/Sandy. Well, just about 79 years ago, almost exactly, in fact, it was June the 6th of 1944, the Allies, and that was the Americans, the British, the French, and various other countries, united to fight Germany, invaded Western Europe for the first time, and they did it in the largest amphibious assault in history. It was more than 150,000 troops landed along a 50-mile stretch of heavily fortified French coastline to fight Nazi Germany on the beaches of Normandy, France. You might remember that we interviewed Joseph, we re-aired an interview I did with him in 2016. He was 16 when he landed on that beach. If you didn't hear that, go back to the Memorial Day kind of celebration back in the podcast, and you will love that interview. Joseph described to us what happened on that day. There were more than 5,000 ships, 11,000 aircraft supported the invasion, and by the end of the day, the Allies had finally gained a foothold in France. You can't even imagine, if you haven't learned the details, how bloody and awful it was, but how victorious and incredible it was to the war effort. There were about 9,000 Allied soldiers killed or wounded. So we are in Bedford, Virginia today, Bruce and I, and the reason we're here, this is where the National Memorial to those that were killed on D-Day is, and that's because Bedford was just a little town of about 3,000. And of 37 citizens, young men, from Bedford in Company A of the 116th Infantry Regiment, 29th Division, 31 of them loaded into landing craft and headed for Omaha Beach in the first wave. And en route, a landing craft struck an obstacle and sank, stranding dozens far from the shore, including five of Bedford's boys. Now, the remaining 26 successfully reached Omaha Beach, where 16 were killed, four wounded, just within a matter of minutes. Three others were unaccounted for and later presumed killed in the action. There's a whole lot more to say about that story, but it was a total of 20. They, Bedford, Virginia, suffered the nation's severest per capita D-Day loss because it was a small town, 20 boys. It's a really sad story, but it's also just a story of patriotism. So we're here enjoying this. And while we were here, you'll never guess who we met. We met the grandson of General George S. Patton, the grandson of General Patton. And we're going to talk to him. We did talk to him. And then we're going to talk about a little bit more about Patton after we have that discussion with him. So this is really interesting, and I hope that you'll stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, this is fun. We are today, this is actually for us in real time, the day before the 79th anniversary of D-Day, the day that the Allies landed, the Americans landed, and the Allies on the shores of Normandy. It was a huge battle.
There goes a tank.
There goes a tank.
They're going into the water.
Oh, and that's the voice of George Patton. George Patton, Pat Waters, who is the grandson of the famous General George S. Patton, the commander of the Third Army, who, this is interesting, we won't go into this yet, but leading up to that, he was the man in terms of the generals under Eisenhower. And so George Patton, Pat Waters, is his grandson. And we are at Bedford, Virginia, the day before this 79th year celebration, commemoration. And it's a beautiful day. We're outside. You're going to hear, you know, like tractors going by, whatever. but we just ran across Pat. Just happened. We had no idea he was here because we, as you know, most of those of you who listen, I just interviewed a 91-year-old gentleman. I interviewed him in 2016. His name was Joseph. He called randomly on the morning show and talked about what happened when he landed on the beaches in Normandy. He was 16 years old, and he told us this dramatic story. I replayed it recently on Memorial Day. And so now here we are at the 79th anniversary. And, of course, Joseph served under General Patton. He actually drove his Jeep. So just the connections here. My own father was in Patton's Third Army. So, Pat, it's really, really an honor to meet you. Thank you for joining us.
I'm the lucky one to get to meet both of you all coming up here. I'm so glad you stopped in here to reconnect with these folks.
Is it possible have your grandfather's eyes?
Well, they're my own, but I was always told I did.
Yeah, he had those blazing. I mean, we saw the movie, so we know. I'm not kidding.
George C. Scott did a wonderful job, though. He was extremely good.
Yes, we're talking about, you know, we're talking to lots of people, and some of them, as you well know, don't know their history well. So we're going to kind of talk about this because even though I know you're not your grandfather still, the bloodline and the knowledge that you have of him would be something that we wouldn't know. And
No, I wouldn't.
And so Bruce and I both love history. Both of our dads served his dad served in the Third Army also. So this is a really nice connection. Okay, so, Pat, you were born in 1941, is that right?
Right. Let me just, where I came from.
Yes.
My mother was Beatrice Patton, and she was General Patton's firstborn daughter. And she married my dad, and my dad was 1931 West Point, and they got married in 36, and I was born in 41. I have an older brother born in 1939. And so that's how I came into the world. I've done nothing to be Patton, but I am his grandson and I accept that. But I was a naval officer because my father thought I really didn't need to go in the Army and mess up his career, because he as well was a four-star general.
Your father?
My dad was John Waters.
Okay.
And he was exceptional, to grow up under. So I had a choice of the Navy or the Navy. And so I chose the Navy, which I loved, and served 5 years. And then the war was over. We figured we won it, so we came home. So that's how I am. I'm George Patton Waters. I'm the second born. My brother's John Knight Waters, which is my dad's name.
Okay.
So that's...
So you have isn't it interesting? Yeah, I'm sure you know this, Pat. Bruce and I find that, like our families are... We're not like 10 generations of military, but I'm telling you, mine goes back to the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
But there are so many Americans who have no connection with service to the country, no connection with this day, no understanding.
And no interest. That's what kills me. There's so many people that don't know what today is. I even had friends say, why are you going to Bedford? What's on June the 6th? And I just think, well... You come along sometime, because they don't know where it all came from. And
no.
This is the place. This is the memorial to those that gave it all, and those that came home also.
Now, this particular memorial, Bruce and I just got here, so we haven't had a chance to take the tour or anything.
Oh,
but
Lord.
We will. So this is a tour. Is this a tribute to all of those on D-Day, or is it a tribute to that particular family in Bedford that lost so many sons?
No, they chose Bedford because of the loss of the sons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was just all around Virginia wanted to do something as a memorial. But this memorial is for all the 3,000 or, I know, 150,000 that came ashore on the three beaches. And it's when you see it, I mean, they've got bronze figures of actually like people that were actually there crawling ashore, and the little bullets come. Oh, it's amazing what they have. No, it's a tribute to all who served, not just to the Bedford boys.
You know, it seems like if we could paint a picture, sort of, it's probably the modern version of when we used to see the British march in a straight flank against the opposition, and they just go down like flies, and then the next line of defense, next line of offense would come up, and they just drop and drop, and some happened to live, and some happened to die, and they just kept moving forward. Well, this is kind of like those guys going ashore with the backs of those amphibious trucks dropping down. They were coming, they're marching into bullets without...
Well.
Do they have air cover then? I don't even...
They had slight air coverage, but it was... The Germans had the beach, it was lined up. That you got off the ship, or you came out of the bow of the ship, and you were a target. They knew where you were. A friend of mine, a fellow who was a veteran, came ashore in a tank, and he was driving off the LST, and the minute the door opened to the LST, it was too far offshore... He drove off the end of it into the water. Well, just as it went into the water, a 5.155 German round went into the back of his tank through the commander's, the back, both front hatches were open, just blew him out like corks. I mean, it was a massacre. But it wasn't that bad, because we came ashore and we got there.
Yeah, the thing of it is, it was by sheer force of will.
Will and
numbers. Sacrifice of lives. They actually got ashore, and this was the beginning of the invasion that ended up in Germany. The Americans didn't go into Germany, but...
But it ended up well, but the thing is, this is when it all began of your brothers. Take care of your brothers. You followed the guy before you, behind you, beside you. You took care of him. This was, I think, the actual big first time we realized that all in combat are brothers. Mm-hmm. And that's what you were fighting for, was your brother. I know you're fighting for your wife, too, but... Some of them didn't have them.
Yeah.
They just wanted liberty.
But that's what I hear men say who are in combat. You know, like, yeah. In Iraq, and they say the same thing. It's like the brotherhood, because they are locked together,
sure.
And they either fight together or they die together, you know?
They do.
It's a mystery to so many people, as we just described, because they've never done that. But I wish you could have heard that.
I'd love to.
I want to describe this again. I'm on the show, doing a live show in the mornings, and I ask, it was a D-Day of another year, 2020, and I just ask, is there a World War II veteran who has a story about this day? I don't want you to call me and tell me about your grandfather, your father. I want only, if you're not a veteran, you don't have a story, don't call me. The phone rings. It's this Joseph. Hi, this is Joseph. And he could hardly hear, but he was hilarious. And he starts to tell us about, he was 16. He talked about the waves. He was in the third wave. He talked about the water being filled with blood, the bodies everywhere as he got on shore. It was so moving. And Pat, his daughter, contacted us later. Joseph has since died. But his daughter contacted us later and said the family had never heard those details.
They don't want to talk about it. No, they don't.
But that was a golden moment, and I think that...
you were lucky to get that, and he was wonderful to give that to you. What a memory for everybody to share.
Really, and truly. Now, your dad, your grandfather was not... Wait, I don't want to start with this part, because I want to talk about his... Well, he was called Old Blood and Guts. He was really... it's hard to explain. How would you describe your grandfather? Not from your personal knowledge yet, just the public figure.
Well, everybody thought he was a mean, great big, boisterous SOB, if you excuse the language. But he was just a big person. He was just really big. And
you mean big physically?
No, that's what they
larger,
thought.
His,
they thought
his personality.
They thought he was. I mean, he was not. He was about the same size as I am. Probably didn't weigh as much, but he had blue eyes, and he was a nice looking guy after you got past the uniform part of it.
Yeah,
but I think people respected him because he led, and that's why they said Old Blood and Guts. It's our blood and your guts, or our guts and your blood. He didn't stop. I mean, you look at all of his actions. You watch football when they start playing consecutive. Mm-hmm. That's the way he did it. He just kept going. There was no time to stop except when they cut his fuel off.
Can you tell us some, tell us some history. No, I'm not talking about the controversies yet. We'll get to that.
There was no controversy.
Oh, okay.
He was right. What's the issue?
I know. But according to historians, there were some problems. But
were wrong.
But he was fierce in battle, and that was the point. And this was I think Bruce and I watched recently, it was a British series, and the remark was made, they were investigating these terrible murders, and one of the detectives said, this is not like anything we've seen. This is pure evil. This is pure evil.
Yeah.
And World War, I'm sure all wars contain evil, but this war was particularly driven by a wicked evil, don't you believe?
It was, but you have to realize that General Patton convinced his men to believe in what he believed in, and they convinced him they could do the job. And so when you have that kind of a determination, you're unstoppable.
Yeah.
And that's what that was his expertise, was to share. His personality was driving, and he drove his men. He made them know their value and what they're worth. Every man is worth so much. Every finger is worth so much, as my dad says, because you can pull the trigger. And that's why you need those people who are committed and devoted.
I've asked my husband, Bruce, to sit next to me. Bruce is, again, his father was, he was a Purple Heart winner, and won some other awards for his valor.
He wasn't a winner, he earned it.
Yeah, thank you,
yeah.
Thank you. Pardon my language, representing.
No, that's
Bruce loves all things war. He knows all about it, and I know He has so much information and knowledge about General Patton. I thought maybe he might want to just ask you some questions.
Well, first, if it's an honor to meet you, sir.
Bruce, and it's my honor to meet you. Thank you for what you're doing, both y'all.
Your family has given so much to our country, and I think what you were saying earlier about people not having interest or not caring, that's a real shame. It's more than just a shame, but it's really hard to believe.
Scary, isn't it?
And it's, again, it is an honor to meet someone representing your family. I think, you know, we all have a public perception of your grandfather, and you guys have touched on it, but I know your time with him was very limited, but do you have any personal stories about the general?
Oh, yeah. Well, I know language is important, but and I won't use the profanity, but, I mean, from the day I met him, I was almost five, and he came home. He'd never seen me as a grandson, and my mother told me to go out and stand by my Jeep and salute him when he got out of the car. So I see this monstrous person getting out of the car that all we knew was big and bad and had a second vocabulary. And he gets out of the car, and I see the boots come out. And then there's a German shepherd he has. He lets that damn dog out. And we didn't get along, the shepherd and I. And then his body with the pistols and the cigar and the helmet comes out, and he looks at me. And I probably saluted with the left hand. But he addresses me and says, "Who are you, you little bleep?" And I said, "Well, that's my new name." So we didn't start off well. But, you know, he had no idea who I was or what I was.
He really didn't know
who
you were.
He didn't know.
You know, that's one of the things about war that gets lost sometimes is Sandy's older sister was born while your dad was overseas.
Right before he went over. And she was a newborn. And when he came back, she was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he was never around her when she was little.
Well, that's the thing. But, you know, also, you ask about his personality. I mean, it was something, but he really, you knew inside he was a good person. But you didn't want to talk to him. You didn't want to sit in a room with him. You just didn't, I didn't need to be around him, and he didn't need me to be around him.
Well, tell me, what was the relationship with your mother and him? Well, she was the first.
Oh, she was very close. They were very close.
So how did he relate to her?
Well, I don't remember. I was so terrified.
5 years old, okay.
I ran in and told my brother. He said, "Well, what's he look like?" Because my brother was terrified. And I said, "Well, he's not Santa Claus." Because we thought he was going to bring us some presents. He didn't bring us any presents, but he brought a footlocker. In the footlocker, there was a Mauser, a couple of rifles, some crumpled uniforms, and he had a helmet that had a hole right in the front of it. And he stood, got that helmet. Of course, I tried to put it on right away to see what it felt like. Well, it cut my head, and I started crying. Well, that was a mistake. And after I took it off, though, he looked at me, and you so-and-so person, don't be afraid, because this helmet was the helmet of a hero. And it was a German helmet, and I have it on a Jeep at home now. But he said the man died for his country, so he was very respectful of the enemy, of the soldiers, of the officers, of everybody. He was not, "I'm the only one." Well, he would say that, but he was just extremely grateful of that.
And I think going back to what you had mentioned earlier about your grandfather, it was go, 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 you know, keep moving. You know, some people would view that as, well, that's kind of reckless. But really, if you think about it, that's the way you save your own people. You don't give the enemy time to regroup. Bring in reinforcements and put up barricades. You want to just stay as hot on their trail as you can get.
That's exactly right. And that's what he believed in. He followed that from what you were talking about, the lines of the British. They would just keep going. You think, well, how stupid can you be? The guy, three guys up get shot. The next guy gets shot. You know, it's your turn. But you kept going. And that's the kind of motivation you have to develop.
I want to know from you two war gurus, I want to know what he accomplished. I'm telling you, we're talking to people that have no knowledge. So what, did he take on Rommel? Was that his big battle in North Africa? I don't know, see?
Well, he went into North Africa and helped resolve that situation. My dad went into North Africa and became a guest of the Germans. So he got captured, but then Patton came in afterwards. And Patton was, my dad was shipped away by the Germans. What did he accomplish? I think he led the spirit of America to the all the way up to the Pills and Czech Republic. I mean, he led it to the borders. He led it as far as he could go. He was working against Eisenhower most of the time, which is, we know that.
Working against him. So yeah, they didn't have a good,
They weren't the best of friends.
Different style, right? Totally different.
Well, Eisenhower, Patton was not a politician. He was a warrior.
Right.
And Eisenhower was a politician. And Eisenhower never fired a rifle. He never shot at a person. But he was damn good in his thinking. And I think between the two of them, they were a team. But, a lot of teams have a little bit of envy between the two captains. And so General Patton made some mistakes, but he lost some pretty high numbers of men in certain things he did. But
like Churchill, who took chances. Yeah. And remember, he was so criticized because he did some incredible, unusual things.
Yeah.
And won, and sometimes he'd do incredible, unusual things and lost a lot of people.
Well,
yeah,
that's
so
the price
it's the same
of war.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
the price of war. Yeah. But the people in this country don't even know. I've asked people about the war, and they say, which war?
Oh, I know.
Who fought? Who was in it?
I think probably one of the most important things your grandfather did was we were really on our heels when we first went into the war. Our army was not ready. Our equipment was not good. Our soldiers were not trained properly. And he went in, your grandfather, and really put the wood to some people and got people straightened out, got them thinking like soldiers, looking like soldiers, acting like soldiers. Because think of the head start the Germans had on the Americans.
Yeah.
They had already been in the actual war for 2 years. A lot of them had been in Spain during that civil war. A lot of them had come up, the Hitler Youth.
They were
trained militarily and trained to think like military people. And here's our guys. They're basically at home for that time, and all of a sudden they're called up into the army, and they don't know anything about military
service.
No,
they just volunteered to go, or they got called. But no, we had no knowledge of that kind of fighting.
Now, when you were a kid, did you talk about what was happening on the war theater? Your dad was there too.
He was a prisoner of war.
Okay.
He was the guest of the Germans.
Well, that's what you. Yes. Yeah, so tell us about that a little
well,
bit.
Well, he. I was five when Patton came around.
Right.
I didn't know what he did for a living. I didn't have any idea because war was not discussed.
We
always blacked out our windows at night. I remember one time I was terrified of lightning, and nobody blacked out the windows, and Patton was there. So this lightning kept going off, and I said, "Well, God, I don't want to be around that." And so I hid under a couch or a bed, a bunk, and all of a sudden I hear these boots coming down the hall, boom, 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 boom. And my brother's little squeaky voice, Uncle George, said, "Where the hell's Georgie?" And I'm thinking, I know where I am. And fortunately there was a dog in there, a boxer, that had come in with me because he didn't care for it either. His hand reaches underneath the couch for the insertion, and I pushed the boxer and it bit his hand.
Oh!
A hand came back and got me. I was bloody. It looked like I'd been chewed up. But he changed my name from Georgie. He said, nobody's a coward. Nobody's going to be called Georgie who's a coward. And I was terrified. So
yeah. So this is actually not a funny story.
No, this is true. It changed my name. And I was fine with Pat. Well, my brother said they named it Patsy, but I shortened it, so it's Pat.
Well, so that leads us to the story that's famous about your dad, and that is a soldier was have what we call now PTSD, I guess you would call it that, and Patton was visiting the hospitals. Now, the precursor to that, my understanding, is that he was, cared about his men. He's in there
loved
checking on them. So, do you want to tell,
well,
did you?
Well, let me ask you this. What is your choice? If you've got 490,000 men sitting in foxholes that are just as scared, and one guy sitting on a hospital bed saying, "General, I'm scared." I mean, what was he supposed to do? Say, "Oh, you'll get over it"? No. He did that. He slapped that guy because of the 490,000 people that he was representing. Yes, he cared for his people. And that soldier, I think that soldier turned out pretty good. He went back to war, and he ended up a janitor at a high school in New Orleans. I met him. He said that's the best thing that ever happened to him.
You know, isn't that interesting? I was actually going to ask you that, if we know what happened. It reminds me of, I just think that when you discipline children even, we are so averse to doing anything that would hurt their feelings that we've let them just
we've
get weak. And
yeah.
And so that's what he was doing. He was exercising. He was like, wake up, stop it, and get a hold of yourself. My mother used to say that to me. Did your mother say that to you, Bruce?
In probably a little stronger terms.
Stronger terms.
Yeah.
I bet they were.
Yeah, so, but that went worldwide, and he was very criticized for that because he, you know, let's get a hold of yourself, basically.
Well, he slapped a couple people. But I think the thing is, the man, there's a certain amount of battle fatigue that he suffered, too.
Well, sure.
And so he was tired.
Pat, I'm sure you must meet people that served under your grandfather or had family members that served under your grandfather. That must be amazing, the things that you're told.
Oh, it is. I mean, I'll be with some people tonight at dinner whose dads were captured with my dad. And, you know, they didn't serve under Patton. They got captured. Some of them were captured, you know, up in Italy and stuff. But no, I meet the most wonderful people. And I like his story about the Jeep driver, though. I mean, there's one Jeep driver who passed away named Jeep Stanza, who lived in California, and he swore he was the driver. But if I accrued everybody who said they drove for Patton and they drove him 10 miles, he'd have circled the world about 30 times.
Well, was there a driver that you know of that could claim that fame?
No, there was Jeep Stanza, and then there was a guy named Woolrich that was driving the car in the accident. I mean, all of the people deserve merit for what they did.
We should talk about how your grandfather died.
Well, I want you to know that he died from that accident. He died from a broken neck, and he was in a bed. It was no conspiracy. He was in a bed with pneumonia, and in those days, they just rolled you. They didn't rock you, and they just didn't roll him enough, and he just actually drowned in his own saliva of what pneumonia causes. And my grandmother was over there, and there was a policeman that swears he was in the room, said, no, he just looked up and said, I'm gone. So, another tank.
Yeah, another tank. Oh, yeah, we're under attack here at the War Memorial in Bedford, Virginia.
It was honestly an accident. And
yeah, so we didn't say he was in a Jeep, and this was after the war, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was down in Bavaria, and he was in a Cadillac-style car. He leaned through the security window, which is the window between the drivers and the generals, where he says, well, what's that like? Well, it's like a police car, you know? And he reached through there to try to push the cigarette lighter in to light his cigar, and the driver leaned over to help him. And if you look at the car at Fort Knox, the lighter's on the left side, way on the right side, and the driver was short. He fell down behind the wheel, so to speak, and he just accelerated the car and hit the truck. But the truck did turn left in front of him. But how many times have you seen somebody not start when the light's green, so you just zip left? I mean, Patton said, you can't penalize my men for this. It's not their fault. It was an accident. And that's the way the families always felt, it was an accident.
When you grew up, and now that you're grown up, I'm
not
sure
yet.
Those... well, you haven't grown up yet. Okay, sorry, correct that. When you were young, you had these not good experiences with your uncle, and that doesn't surprise us that know his M.O. about he was tough and just all that you said, stern. But has your opinion, has it altered? I mean, you hear what the world is saying about him, and you have your own personal experiences, but as you've grown up and you served in the military yourself, what are your thoughts about him as a man? Have they...
His contributions to this country were just unbelievable. I mean, as I've grown up, I've just learned to love that. I love the people who served with him. You've got to remember those 300,000 or 400,000 people he commanded. And also you've got to remember their wives. Every one of these guys either had a mother or a wife. Every one of these boys that was killed, they were birthed, nurtured, probably taken to the train station by their moms. And so those are just, I've met more of them because they've obviously the younger generation of the older generations. They're just wonderful people. And I'm the luckiest guy to have had him as a grandfather.
You know, I was just going to say, my father was an engineer in the engineer corps, building the bridges, you know, in the rivers. And he has a lot of interesting stories. I remember just one colorful story. They are building a bridge, and the Germans are on one side of the river, and the Americans on the other side of the river, and they're in the middle of the river. They just finished this pontoon bridge, and they're trying to get to safety, but they're in the crossfire of both sides. And he talked about how terrifying that was.
Sure.
Yes. And then he also talked about one time being on the back of one of those transport trucks where they transport soldiers, and they're sitting sideways, and it's like a canopy, yeah, and like a round. And they all of a sudden, a German plane comes at them to strafe the convoy. And they hit the truck my dad was on. He said the guys on either side of him were killed, and he was blown out of the truck. So just things like just war. I just wanted to kind of give people an understanding. And my dad came back home.
That's the sad part.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a good part for us, but for the people who, you know, the kids didn't come home and have Christmas and stuff like that. And there's a lot to be said.
Is there anything else you'd want to say about your grandfather, General George S. Patton, or about D-Day itself? Anything further?
Well, I think the first thing about General Patton is I so appreciate you doing this and keeping people aware. But as far as D-Day itself, what a remarkable day it is, and what a remarkable day it is here in Bedford, and how sad it is America hasn't figured out how this all started and what these boys did, and men and women, when they went ashore. I've met them up here. I've been coming here for some time, and I've met a lot of the veterans. I mean, Jesus, what a sacrifice. What a chance they took. But, you know, they believed in this country. And if we don't believe in our country, if we don't believe it's worth dying for, then we're not really a very good person.
I feel the same way. I mean, I always say that America is... some people laugh at patriotism, but we have a family, all of us, and we are expected to sort of protect and defend and love our families, our mothers, our fathers, our brothers and sisters. But America is our family as well, our extended family. And if we don't care about it, we don't protect it, and we don't defend it, then we are neglecting our family. And
it's our duty.
Yes, absolutely.
Duty, honor, country.
Yeah.
And if you don't take this as your duty, then you don't... I don't say you're worthless, but you need to change. You need to get up and believe in God and believe in your country and believe in your duty, because it's your duty to believe in something. Why not the country?
Well, yes. Like God first and the country. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I agree there.
George Patton, Pat Waters. It's been a pleasure. Grandson of General George S. Patton, who commanded the 3rd Army. This is really a serendipitous moment. I thank you for joining us. Okay,
thank you so much.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, there's a whole lot more to say about General George S. Patton, and Bruce is such a war buff that we're going to tell you some stories that we didn't get to in our interaction with Mr. Waters, so I hope you'll stay tuned. But first, I want to thank Preborn, and I want to thank all of you who have so generously contributed. Abortion seemed like the only option for a girl named Mackenzie, but she and her boyfriend agreed to an ultrasound. And it was still too early to determine if her baby was healthy and viable, but her client advocate from Preborn was able to help them better understand fetal development and what is involved in abortion. And they were both horrified. They were invited to come back for a second ultrasound, and after hearing her baby's heartbeat, it became real, but she still wasn't sure. After a third ultrasound, she was still confused. But when the client advocate told her about God and the miracle of life, she and her boyfriend decided to keep that baby. And now they're signed up for parenting classes and other services offered by a Preborn Network clinic. You see, that's how it works. Preborn is in the business of not only saving babies' lives, but really saving the eternal life, creating eternal life, presenting eternal life to the moms, and to bring abundant life. It's really not enough just to save the baby, although that's what they do. So the way they work is through these ultrasound machines that they offer. They cost $28 for each test for these girls, or Revelation ultrasound. And if you'd like to help, you can go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, coming up next, Bruce is going to join me, and we're going to tell you some stories that you might not have heard anyplace else, so stay tuned.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios.
A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Seated. All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle. When you were kids, you all admired the champion marble shooter, the fastest runner, big league ball players, the toughest boxers. Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser. Americans play to win all the time. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war. Because the very thought of losing is hateful to Americans.
Well, that was the famous actor George C. Scott playing George S. Patton in a movie by that name, Patton, several years ago. It was a dramatic moment. It was the opening of the movie, and it was an actual speech that George S. Patton delivered. I thought you might want to hear it. Well, let's go back to our on location when we had just finished interviewing George S. Patton's grandson, and we're sitting around the picnic table, and this is what it sounded like. Okay, Sandy Rios back with you. I've asked Bruce to join me again because Bruce knows so much about war. He's like a walking encyclopedia. And honestly, honey, I felt in that conversation, I wanted to hear more about General Patton, even more than we got from his grandson. And so you have a story to tell about him that I think we should share.
Well, I think since we're here commemorating D-Day, it's important to tell the story of Patton's both involvement and non-involvement in the D-Day invasion. Even though publicly President Roosevelt had selected Eisenhower to be the Allied Supreme Commander, the Germans were not convinced of this. They said, no way, Patton is going to lead this attack on the eventual attack on Europe because he's their best fighting general. And so the Americans basically used this misconception by the Germans in their favor because what the Allies were afraid of with D-Day is we've got to keep the Germans off balance. We cannot let them know exactly where we're coming ashore, or they'll be waiting for us, and they may blow us right back into the water. So logic would tell you that the Allies would have attacked from England across the English Channel to the Pas-de-Calais. It's only 22 miles away, and there's beaches there. However, Normandy, which was the other likely landing space, was 60 miles across the English Channel. The English Channel is a rough body of water. It's not easily crossed. So the Americans decided, you know what? We're going to use Patton as our decoy. And we're going to build up a fake army around him. And we're going to give radio traffic that they knew the Germans were intercepting, indicating that Patton was in Calais and that he was gearing up to lead the real attack against Europe. And what the army did is they went to Hollywood and got people that were good at creating, like, blow-up or inflatable tanks, trucks, jeeps, planes, and they scattered these around the area near where Patton's alleged army was so that it looked like they were building up all this equipment to invade with.
And could I just say that the Germans fell for that hook, line, and sinker?
They did. even weeks later, Hitler was still convinced that the attack at Normandy was a diversion and that Patton was going to lead a huge invasion across the Pas de Calais.
You know, one thing we just found out in the tour was that Hitler had one of his famous parties where he had a lot of people, a lot of drinking, and everyone listening to him talk, because he did like to talk, and you did have to listen if he talked. So they went to the early morning hours, and then his doctor would give him some kind of narcotic to help him sleep. And so he actually did not even know, because they weren't allowed to wake him up, about the invasion until noon the next day.
Yeah, on June the 6th, the Germans started running into the paratroopers who were dropped near midnight. And then at 6:30 in the morning, that's when the big invasion started. And at noon that day, Hitler was still sleeping. And like Sandy said, they were such underlings, they were afraid to wake up the Führer out of his sleep to let him know that the invasion was on. And even after he did eventually wake, and they asked him for permission to use the German tanks as reinforcements, he refused to allow that because he said, this is a diversion. The real attack will come at Calais.
And one more thing, because I think this makes me smile. Hitler had declared that the Americans were mongrels. They could never beat the German troops on land. If they ever came into Germany, they would lose because the Americans were, and he gave a series of, let's say, racial slanders about the Jews, about the black Americans, about Italians. He had a whole list. Everybody had a name because he was a eugenicist and he believed in the superiority of the German race. And so he didn't think we could ever beat him. That's one glorious thing about this victory on D-Day. And I think you could easily say that this was the turning point in the war. And if you don't know much about World War II, crack out your old Britannica. You might have to go to some older source. I'm not sure Google's trustworthy now. But this is the most incredible story where so many men gave their lives. And it's been a pleasure to be here. You'll want to come to this. It's in Bedford, Virginia. It's the National D-Day Memorial. Honey, thank you. I so appreciate your information on this.
This is an amazing place. I highly, highly request that you come here.
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed this version of Sandy Rios 24/7.